Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. Later in the show, we'll discuss coverage of the Israeli Prime Minister's eighth visit to the White House, the intensification of the war in the Middle East, and Gaza, where Palestinians are still being killed and living in horrific conditions. We begin by discussing whether the U.S. media is meeting this moment. We will also talk about coverage of last Friday's White House Correspondents' Dinner and what it reveals about the state of the media under the Trump regime. At the dinner, some of the country's most prominent journalists watched in silence as Trump insulted them. One of today's guests, Dan Frumkin, writes, "Donald Trump and the nation's top political journalists are in an abusive relationship. He lies to them constantly, insults them, sues them, calls them traitors, tries to turn the public against them, gaslights them, bans them, and threatens their outlets with disillusion. And they almost never fight back. Indeed, they actually cover up for him." Dan Frumkin is editor of Press Watch, an independent nonprofit devoted to encouraging political journalists to fulfill their essential mission of creating an informed electorate and holding the powerful accountable. Dan Frumkin recently started Heads Up News, a weekly newsletter about the week's most consequential acts of resistance and other news from the fighting back community. Dan spent nearly three decades building, editing, and contributing to news outlets, including The Washington Post, HuffPost, and The Intercept. Hi, Dan. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Hi, so great. Good to be here.
Great to have you. Will Bunch is an award-winning journalist and national opinion columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Will Bunch has written several books on politics, including his most recent, After the Ivory Tower Falls, How College Broke the American Dream and Blew Up Our Politics, and How to Fix It. We should also mention that the editorial board at the Philadelphia Inquirer published an editorial arguing that Trump's attacks on the media are attacks on the public's right to know. Hi, Will. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Hi, Rose. Thanks so much for having me back. I really appreciate it.
Well, we love having you both on because you have been at this for many, many years. You are in the trenches writing such important articles. So thank you. We are living in such a critical time right now. The devastating wars, Trump's relentless war on immigrants. I mean, we are watching people be shot and killed on the streets of this country. The dire state of the economy. We just did a show about how so many people are losing their food assistance. So, Dan, let's start with you. I mean, you spent many years at the Washington Post. You then went to The Intercept. You're now independent. When we ask, is the media meeting this moment? What do you think it means to meet this moment?
Well, you know, the short version of my now decade-long critique of the media's coverage of Donald Trump in particular is that they treat him like a normal president when he's in fact a profoundly abnormal president. And, you know, you mentioned the White House Correspondents Association dinner. There was an example of a bunch of correspondents who were literally, they wanted to normalize the relationship with Trump. They wanted to treat him like a normal president, and they reap what they sow. That is the consistent problem with the media's coverage of Trump, is when they're writing about things that should make their heads explode because they're so bizarre and so antithetical to, you know, what we've seen as good government in the past. They do it very calmly and without any kind of alarm, and they often use euphemisms that actually cover up the depth of his incompetence, racism, and so on.
So, Dan, what explains this?
The explanation is two things. One is, It's a frog in the boiling water situation where this has all come upon them over time. And there was never like one particular moment when it was obvious they needed to change course. And their course, their pre-existing course, was one based on a situation when there were two parties that disagreed strongly, but at least had the same concepts of reality. And so their job was not to take sides. It was very important that that's how they sort of defined their value to the to the to the you know to being part of the you know the ruling class. The elite media doesn't take sides, and so it was very hard for them to recognize that this administration posed challenges to such core values as democracy and the free press that they had to take sides, not necessarily against Trump and certainly not for the Democratic Party, but in defense of core values. And they just couldn't bring themselves to do it. And the internal pressure from top management has been consistent in that direction.
Will, do you agree with Dan? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, that's a loaded question because I always agree with Dan all the time. I think Dan is fantastic, but yeah, he's absolutely right. Well, you know, I totally agree with this analysis. You know, I think all the time, and I'm sure a lot of listeners have heard this famous quote from California's own Upton Sinclair that, you know, you cannot make a man understand something when his salary depends upon not understanding it. And, you know, I think about that all the time with the media. I mean, you know, like any profession, whether it's the priesthood or electrical engineering or whatever, you know, there's these kind of weird ethoses that develop within that world, and sometimes they're almost inscrutable to the outside world. But you know, journalists place incredible value on this idea that, you know, I'm not biased, that you know, that I'm not picking one side over the other. And as Dan noted, you know, when one party in our American politics goes off the rails and starts being under a foundation of kind of untruths, that, you know, that is such a challenge to their worldview that I think they've had a hard time accepting it. You know, they just keep pushing for a view that, well, this is normal. You know, you look at the coverage of something like the Iran war, and again, papers that should know better, like the New York Times, you know, keep trying to shoehorn what Trump is doing into some kind of conventional foreign policy worldview that's just not there. You know, I mean, he bombed Iran because he thought he could get away with it. And it's just, they feel like if they admit that, it would just kind of undermine everything else they're doing and their whole kind of vision of themselves. And so that's problematic. I did, you know, when you asked Dan the question, I would, and I hope we can get into this some, but, you know, I mean, the thing about the media is, you know, it's kind of like the proverbial elephant with so many different parts, right? And I don't think we should forget that for all our kind of righteous disgust at the White House Correspondents' Dinner and some of what we see at the highest levels of elite journalism and also these, you know, big news organizations like the Washington Post and CBS that have come under ownership that for what various reasons is selling out to the Trump regime. You know, for all of that, there's thousands of journalists in this country, some of them at big papers, but a lot of them in your local communities who are still doing God's work, you know, and right. And we can't lose sight of that.
Exactly. And I think that's such a great point because there's so much amazing journalism happening out there. Dan, as you know, and you will, it is hard to keep up with all of the independent media outlets that have sprung up in the last few years. They're doing great work, but the challenge is elevating that work because there's so much out there. And Dan, that is why we often bring reporters on to try to elevate their great reporting because so many people miss these investigative pieces because there's such a, our attention spans are just going in many, many different directions right now because there are so many options.
Yeah, all I can say is yes, that's exactly right. I do focus on sort of the mainstream media though, and I do think there is some excellent reporting. There is some fantastic investigative reporting. For instance, I mean, if you look at the investigative reporting coming out of the major news organizations, it's as good as it's ever been. But when it comes to political reporting that recognizes the actual reality of the situation. It's mostly these independent groups, and it's very hard for them to get bandwidth. I should add one thing. You know, you asked why the media responds the way it does, and I, you know, Will and I talked about this notion of not being biased. There's the other issue, which has always existed, which is the issue of access. And you know, to some extent, the profession requires you to speak to everybody and to get your calls returned from everybody. And that has always created a problem, especially with the, you know, with the political administrations that are often lying to them. But it has never created problems like it has now. So I have a little bit of sympathy for that. I always thought, you know, every White House organization should have a good cop, bad cop situation, where one of the reporters, you know, is cozy with the sources, and the other one, you know, actually hits them hard.
Or another thing that was a rallying cry that Dan remembers a few years ago was send the interns, right? You know, the stuff that really does call for, maybe I wouldn't call it stenography, but, you know, going to the Pentagon's dog and pony shows or whatever, you don't send your most senior best people for those jobs. You send your senior best people to do investigative reporting, you know, to dig through the documents, to talk to, you know, to meet the people in the parking garages or whatever, you know. But yeah, absolutely. Good cop, bad cop is a great idea.
Well, and it speaks to what the dinner's problem, because these are the core of the group is literally White House correspondents. And these are people whose job is defined by being close to the president, which is, and in fact, that's not a very exciting job.
No, not at all.
You know, since you brought up this dinner, Dan, you have been to this dinner many, many years ago. What is the point of this gathering? Why does it exist?
It has its origins in some good intentions. One is they actually do present scholarships and awards to excellent young students and to excellent journalism. In fact, this year, you know, if you did watch the dinner, there was this extraordinary scene of Trump sitting there while they gave award after award after award to some seriously hard-hitting journalism by the mainstream news organizations, including, you know, one guy who he sued for $2 billion for writing about Epstein. So the other reason it exists, though, is to celebrate themselves, to celebrate the First Amendment, and to provide ideally a not too dangerous way of doing source maintenance. There is something to be said for, you know, trying to build a working relationship with your sources, and inviting them to a fancy dinner used to be considered sort of not a particularly terrible ethical conundrum. That has all changed, and you know, I was there the day the night that Stephen Colbert gave his extraordinarily accurate summation of how in lead the White House press corps was to George W. Bush at the time. And well, if you thought the audience was silent the other night, you should have heard it then.
Well, Dan, since you brought up the fact that Trump had to sit there as reporters were given awards who broke incredible stories about him and the Epstein files, I do want to play this clip. This is CNN's Wolf Blitzer giving the Katharine Graham Award for Courage and Accountability to a team of reporters at the Wall Street Journal for their piece, DOJ told Trump in May that his name is among many in Epstein files. Trump sat nearby as the award was announced.
This year's award goes to the Wall Street Journal. The journal's courageous reporting on President Trump's past relationship with financier Jeffrey Epstein triggered the release of the so-called Epstein files, thousands of documents that might otherwise have remained hidden from the public. And despite the president's threat of a lawsuit, the journal published a story about a provocative letter to Epstein bearing President Trump's signature. Trump quickly filed a $20 billion lawsuit against the journal, revealing reporter Khadija Safdar's home address. Her family had to be relocated. The journal was kicked off of Air Force One, but the reporters continue to file revelatory stories. Please welcome the winners of the Katharine Graham Award from the Wall Street Journal. Khadija Safdar, Sadie Gurman, Annie Linsky, Josh Dawsey again, Alex Leary, Rebecca Ballhaus, and Ryan Barber. Their colleague, Joe Palazzolo, could not attend tonight.
So that was pretty incredible to watch. Trump smiled, shrugged, and watched the tribute unfold as White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt was seen giving him a supportive pat on his back. Will, this was pretty incredible to watch.
But what in God's name was he doing there in the first place? This was a dinner that specifically was called a celebration of press freedom, of the First Amendment. And this man, there's a huge litany of actions he has taken that are direct assaults on press freedom, way, way beyond anything we could have possibly imagined in any previous administration, including the Nixon administration. I mean, a week before he was at the dais, you know, he had Kash Patel subpoena New York Times reporters because they found out that his bribe plane was in fact not equipped with the proper security provisions. So yes, it's a tradition to have the president, you know, invited there, but they gave him an out because he gave them an out because he hadn't showed up for the last 6-5 years. So stop inviting him, for God's sake.
Will, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, it's interesting because I've never been to the White House dinner. But one interesting thing that a lot of people probably don't know is this is actually replicated all over the country on the state level, like the in state capitals. And I actually worked for Newsday in Albany way back in the 1980s. And so I've been to these dinner, and we put on these elaborate skits making fun of the politicians, and then of course, you know, the governor and maybe one or two other politicians would get up and roast us back, you know. So it's a very similar format to the White House dinner. And I guess, you know, times have changed so much, and I guess I've changed a little bit too, but, you know, back then I like felt good about this. It's like, well, we cover these guys hard during the week, but it's good. It's a good thing about human nature that we can go out and make jokes about each other. But, you know, it was just a different time and the stakes were so much different. You know, Mario Cuomo, who was the governor of New York, you know, wasn't calling us the enemy of the people. He wasn't filing lawsuits against reporters and he wasn't sending FBI agents to our house or, you know, state troopers to our house at you know, midnight to serve subpoenas. So, you know, I mean, the stakes have totally changed. I mean, we like to think there could be a world where journalists and, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, Democrats and Republicans not being able to get along on Capitol Hill or whatever. And, you know, journalists are part of the same equation, honestly. You know, it's like we would like to think of a world where people can do their jobs and be aggressive, but also be human beings and be friendly. And, you know, our kids play in the same soccer league and all that. But, you know, when you have a government that's drifting into, well, that already is authoritarian and is drifting into something even worse than that, it just makes it very hard.
Will Bunch is an award-winning journalist and national opinion columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Dan Frumkin is editor of Press Watch, a nonprofit devoted to encouraging political journalists to fulfill their essential mission of creating an informed electorate and holding the powerful accountable. Dan recently started Heads Up News, a weekly newsletter about the week's most consequential acts of resistance and other news from the Fighting Back community. Dan spent many, many years at news outlets, including the Washington Post and The Intercept. I also want to ask you both, how do you think the media should respond? Some of these prominent journalists allowing him to insult them to our faces and then saying really horrific things about politicians. Here is Trump insulting Representative Ilhan Omar as the crowd sits in silence.
All of your money is going to be taken away. People are fleeing, and they're fleeing in droves. We can't have that in this country. It's becoming such a horrible and dangerous location that Ilhan Omar, one of my favorites, and her brother are thinking about moving together, very much in love. A video has surfaced recently of Ilhan giving a speech referring to World War II as World War XI. And they asked her about that. She still thought she got it right. But I'm not surprised, because she's a low IQ person. And she's also a very dishonest person. And she ought to get the hell out of our country. She shouldn't be here. She shouldn't be in our country. She also calls her brother husband number one.
I mean, Dan, how should media respond to something like this at a time when death threats against politicians are on the rise?
Sorry, my microphone disconnected for a minute. I think it's a no-win situation at that.
They shouldn't have invited him. You know, after a certain point, there's nothing you can do. What are they supposed to do, walk out, boo? I don't think any of those things would be appropriate.
Will, your thoughts?
Yeah. You know, I had a lot of thoughts on this because, you know, I mean, let's be clear. I mean, obviously, I mean, well, first of all, that clip you played was just so appalling. And, you know, I mean, I don't want to lose sight of the fact that the bad guy here is Donald Trump. I mean, this is a war that he started, basically. But, you know, I would also have to say that I was pretty disappointed and kind of infuriated, actually, that the reporters would sit there, well, you know, first invite him, number one, and then knowing that this would probably be the result, and then sit there and listen to it. And the reason why is, you know, and I saw this all the next day or two on social media, which I guess for me is mainly blue sky, but you know, it, just in the comments from everyday people, because they lost so much respect for the media for sitting there, right, and listening to this nonsense. And so I don't know if these people in the room realize it's not just about them, that, you know, this affects the attitudes that people have towards all media, that they lose respect in what we do, and they lose, you know, they lose faith in the media. You know, they lose faith in their local reporter, and, you know, the, you know, York, Pennsylvania Daily Record, or, you know, the Erie Times, or whatever their local hometown paper is, which is the polar opposite of what you saw at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. But you know, that we all know there's a terrible problem with lack of trust in the media, and this isn't the way to win it back. You know, it's the opposite. It was, you know, I really felt it was a low point in just public respect and faith in the media and what it does, and that just has a really corrosive effect on democracy in a much bigger way.
Dan, it was interesting. Peter Baker of the New York Times tweeted, "I have been a member of the White House Correspondents Association almost continuously since the 90s. Our mission is to defend the First Amendment rights of White House correspondents to report on the president without fear or favor. Unfortunately, last night did not advance that cause. Time to rethink the dinner." And it was interesting to see that a Canadian journalist, Annie Dufour, responded, "From Canada, this was painful to watch as a journalist. American media have fallen short of its role as a pillar of democracy, complacent, coy, accommodating, when it should have been unyielding, brave, and bold. You reap what you sow." You know, Dan, I've been thinking it'd be really interesting to bring on international journalists to ask them what they think, looking at the United States and the U.S. press from the outside.
Yeah, I think that should be the way. I think that's a great idea. I think White House reporters should cover the White House as if they were foreign correspondents, rather than as if they were, you know, embedded with the White House. So that kind of perspective is really lacking. I was glad Peter tweeted, you know, wrote what he wrote. I should note that the New York Times actually almost alone has been boycotting the dinner for about 15 years because they thought it was unseemly. Back then, the issue was people were bringing celebrity guests and it was sort of looking tacky. Now, of course, it's even worse. So that was great that he did that. But you didn't hear any of the members of the White House Correspondents Association expressing regret or reconsidering anything. So I agree with Will. They sort of made themselves the laughing stock and an example of what's not to be trusted.
Dan, since you started this new newsletter, which I love, Heads Up News, it's about acts of resistance, news from the Fighting Back community. There's so many protests happening across this country that don't always get the attention they deserve. I have to shout out Rachel Maddow of MS Now, because every Monday night she talks about people who are protesting at ICE detention centers and at AI data centers. And these are people from across the political spectrum. What strikes you about what you see when you look at people resisting that's not getting the coverage it deserves?
I agree. Rachel Maddow is probably the only one who's really covering this, and she is doing a great job. I think basically you're right. A, when people come out to protest, that's newsworthy, that's significant. But some of these protests haven't been that big, unfortunately. And the focus really for everybody is on the midterm election right now, for good reason. So I've been interestingly enough sort of shifting the focus a little bit of Heads Up News to what is the resistance agenda should the Democrats win Congress, you know, this year, should win the presidency in several years. How do you effectively, you know, de-Trumpify and make the government Trump resistant going forward? I love protesters. I wish we were seeing, you know, what they're seeing in Albania, where the half the country is coming out to protest against the government and Jared Kushner.
And there's the really important race in Michigan on Tuesday.
Yes, absolutely. I think what you're also going to see, unfortunately, from the media, especially if the progressive candidate wins there, is more of this sort of scare stories about the left and the Democratic Party. So that's something to look forward to.
Dan Frumkin is editor of Press Watch. He recently started Heads Up News. He spent three decades working for a number of media outlets, including The Washington Post, HuffPost, and The Intercept. Will Bunch is an award-winning journalist and national opinion columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Will and Dan, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rose.
Thank you. Coming up after a break on today's Media Roundtable, we will talk about the escalating war in the Middle East, Gaza, and Netanyahu's eighth visit to the White House. We'll be back after this.